Hello and welcome to Tiller Tattle Podcast Episode 2, your weekly Canal Network radio show brought to you by keepingafloat.co.uk. Coming up today, we've got the latest news and events from across the Canal Network. In this week's Canalysis, I'll be taking a look at the Canal Turf Wars happening on a waterway near you, and we have our very first letter to the show. We also have some exciting news for the podcast. We're now available on Spotify. We're trying to get the podcast out on as many platforms as possible, so if you've got a particular podcast provider, that's a lot of P's, that you prefer, there's another one, then give us a shout on Facebook or Twitter, links to all our accounts are in the show notes, or drop us an email at podcast@keepingafloat.co.uk. Finally, any reviews or social media shares really do help us grow, so get creative. I'll be reading out a selection of reviews at some point in the future, so if you want me to read out a load of double entendres, stick them in a 5-star review, and I will cheerfully debase myself. We have had two interesting articles in the press this week, one fairly standard London-centric piece about the relative cost of living on the canal against the cost of buying or renting, another little bit more unusual article about towpath cyclists I'll be reading some snippets from. On roads, cyclists are vulnerable, but on towpaths, they are the menace. The use of Britain's Narrow Canal towpaths as cycling commuter routes is not sustainable. It is time to ban bikes at peak times. That's quite a bold opening statement. There's a loud screech of brakes. Kate Jackson recalls watching a cyclist anxiously looking behind, speeding off along the canal. Below, on the towpath, lay her kitten. Jackson's pet died minutes after being struck by the cyclist on the Hertford Union Canal, Victoria Park, East London, 2015. For some canal cyclists, including me, it was the final straw. Appalled by the latest tragedy, I abandoned the towpath as a commuter route. Over the previous months, racing on the narrow waterside path felt increasingly incompatible with other users. Serving past mothers with prams or cutting up small dogs trotting languidly by the water had made me feel ashamed. My desire to reach the office on time was patently causing misery to others. Many of the UK's towpaths are narrow and cannot be widened, meaning it's impossible to separate pedestrians from cyclists. These waterways should be calm spaces where people seek solace. Canals, particularly in rush hour, have become the domain of bicycles, the trucks of the towpath. Some travel so manically they are called cyclopaths. These waterways should be calm spaces where people seek solace. In our cities, their value is obviously as green spaces, linear escapes from the stress of urban life. Time-pressed commuters on bikes are destroying this precious resource. As cycling grows more popular, 25 million Britons now own a bike, and cleaner forms of transport more attractive, the impact will escalate. Tipping point has been reached, the volume of cyclists exceeding the capacity of paths built during the Industrial Revolution for horses to slowly tow boats laden with goods. The issue now requires political intervention, a recognition that using canals as key cycling commuter routes is not sustainable. Distributing leaflets enforcing cycle etiquette, which, although well-meaning, offers no evidence it'll influence mass behaviour, the Canal and River Trust message that cyclists should give way to pedestrians as a more vulnerable party is only selectively obeyed. Prohibiting cycling on canals during peak times should be trialled and enforced with on-the-spot fines. The move would be easily policed, as the structure of canals means cyclists cannot avoid checkpoints. Fines should be invested directly into fundraising alternative safe cycling routes on the road network. Now, while I find myself agreeing with large parts of the article, I can't agree with the conclusion. All that banning people from cycling their towpaths would achieve would be to punish those cyclists who aren't causing the problem, while those unsocial creatures doing Mach 3 and mowing down nanas would get away scot-free. I mean, how would you even enforce ticketing a speeding commuter cyclist? They pass at the speed of an African gazelle and are just a blur, so unless we're getting into the realms of stinger devices to punch the tyres or maybe a stick through the forks, any system of fines would be unenforceable and ultimately pointless. Education has to be the key. Getting the message to the bikers that the towpaths are shared space and not a cycle path by water would help. Perhaps I'm just an old idealist, but I like to think that everyone should be able to get along. We're all grown-ups, if I live by the mantra that no one's intentionally trying to annoy anyone else, and that any aggravation is simply a byproduct of somebody else's ignorance. What do you think? Am I giving these speeding cyclists too much credit? Should we really be banning people from public spaces? I'm not convinced that we should. I've linked to the complete article in the show notes, and I really recommend giving it a read. Next up, we've got a piece in the Times that seems to be the perennial Living on a Narrow Boat is Cheap article, which we seem to see every other month. Here's some highlights. High cost of property in London leads young buyers to take the plunge into canal boats. It was only a few months ago that owning their own home seemed a distant prospect for Ben and his girlfriend Prue. The couple were paying £1,500 a month for a one-bed flat in Shoreditch, East London, and could not afford to save for a deposit. They eyed the capital's housing market gloomily, believing that it would take years to get a foothold. Then, while walking home along the canal one day, it struck them there was a route to home ownership that would not break the bank. A boat. With house prices in the capital having risen 253% over the past 20 years, they're not the only ones looking at the waterways. The number of boats in England and Wales registered with the CRT have risen by 13% over the past 4 years to 8,500. Usually each would house a couple because of the difficulties navigating canals single-handed. you can do it. Meaning there's about 17,000 people living on the waterways. However, the real surge, driven by young people, is in London, where the number of boat users home has risen from 2,326 in 2012 to 4,274. Nationally, most boaters are over 55, but the statistic is reversed in the capital, where, according to CRT, 31% of them are aged between 25 and 34. That's actually an interesting stat, isn't it? It probably tells you more about the difference between London and the rest of the waterways than anything else, really. Leo Emmett, 29, a project manager who bought a barge, is it a barge, with a friend for £40,000, said, "If I hadn't moved on to a narrowboat, I wouldn't have stayed in London. Unless you're earning megabucks, there's very little point in buying bricks and mortar here. With demand rising and supply limited, he hopes to sell the Clapton conveyor for £100,000 in a few years and use the profit for a house deposit." On the face of it, that's a pretty easy target, isn't it? I'm yet to hear of anyone who's made a significant profit buying a narrowboat and then selling it on. However, without knowing the specifics of Leo's boat or his mooring, I'm not really in a position to pass judgment. Let's just consider this one a raised eyebrow for a moment and move on. So the article continues, "On a warm summer evening, with the hum of distant traffic and the clink of beer cans all around, it can appear an idyllic lifestyle." Sounds like a council estate. "Lurking unseen is an extraordinary amount of maintenance work and housekeeping to keep everything shipshape. Most of the boats are decades old and hulls, bilges and engines can require constant repair. They need to be refuelled and supplied with water regularly by the delivery boats operated by CRT, which is including the annual licence from £485 to £1,200 depending on size. Ring, 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 hello CRT. Yeah, I'd like to have a chat about the years of fuel deliveries missing from my licence fees. As people flock to London waterways at a rate of 200 a year, many boaters complain that resources are being stretched with not enough refuse and water stations. However, others recognise you cannot have it all." Quotes here, "I know people can be a bit downbeat with it and focus on the negatives, but I think because they sometimes forget that they're living right in the centre of London, often with beautiful natural surroundings for a fraction of what it costs to be in a house," Mr. Chance said. That takes some beating. Lad's got a point. I've got to be honest, I kind of enjoy articles in mainstream media about narrowboats and the canal network. Kind of reminds me how my mum used to call every single video game system a Nintendo, and every game was Mario. Now, you can't really fault journalists for making these sort of silly mistakes. You can't be a subject matter in everything, can you? And if they didn't have these sort of mistakes in their articles, then I wouldn't have anything to podcast about. So I've linked the full article in the show notes. They can be found at keepingafloat.co.uk/podcast. And again, let me know what you think in the comments on Facebook or Twitter. In stoppages this week, I think everyone knows what I'm going to be talking about here. The obvious one is Marple Flight, Peak Forest Canal and Bosley Flight, Macclesfield Canal, following heavy rainfall damage has occurred to the spillway at Todbrook Reservoir, which feeds Peak Forest Canal. CRT have taken the decision to close Marple Flight and the Peak Forest Canal. Emergency services have taken every precaution, including evacuating local properties and closing local roads, unless you've been living under a rock for the past 48 hours, I'm fairly sure you'll know about that one. Also, this is pretty much breaking, Hebden Bridge, Rochdale Canal, Bridge 9-14, due to a fire overnight at the derelict Wakeley Clog Mill near Hebden Bridge. CRT have instructed the police to close the towpath and navigation while the demolition of the building takes place today, Friday the 2nd of August. Further details will be released as demolition work occurs. In this week's Canalysis, I'm looking at Turf Wars, the battle for supremacy happening on a waterway near you. I try and live my life by a few simple rules, one of which is let people enjoy things. Now this might seem like absolute common sense to some, hopefully most of you, but some seem to think it's their divine right to interject in the lives and choice of others. For example, a friend of mine hates the TV show Mrs. Brown's Boys to such an extent he'll stick a negative comment on any mention of it he comes across, even if he has to go out of his way to do so. Now, I'm not a fan, but Mrs. Brown's Boys has a huge following and it is one of the most popular TV programmes on the telly at the moment. It must be doing something right, even if it's not to everyone's taste. Another example is fans of one sport will mock another sport for not being as manly or skillful or as exciting as their sport of choice. It always seems that implying that somehow that they're better than you because they watch rugby rather than tennis, for example. You know, forgetting that they're sitting on the settee, eating crisps, drinking a can and watching it. That isn't the ultimate test of sporting prowess. What's this got to do with the Canal Network, I hear you cry, while I'm labouring my intro, which is a great question. Wide beams versus narrow boats versus cruisers. We've all heard the insults. Fat boats, sewer tubes, crunchies, and it sort of goes on, doesn't it? Mostly said in jest, but if you delve a little bit deeper, There's a substantial minority of voters who actively dislike boats that don't mirror their own choices, and that makes me kind of sad. Now, while I understand the argument that badly crewed Y-beam can cause damage to canal infrastructure, so can a badly crewed narrowboat, and I dare say, give it a good enough run-up, a GRP cruiser could do a fair bit of damage. Some of this animosity, certainly one direction, comes with the feeling that the canal network's somehow too overcrowded. You know, maybe that's true in London, but I'm from God's own country, Yorkshire. I don't have a huge amount of experience down there. So, I mean, of the 2,000 miles of canal network in this country, there's only a small proportion really is navigable by Y-beam. So surely for waterways wide enough, then the beam of the craft's pretty much irrelevant. So, what are your thoughts? Let me know on Facebook or Twitter. I've popped a link to the thread on the Canal World forum in the show notes, where you can sort of read more about this. But yeah, let me know your thoughts. Pop it on Facebook or Twitter. We have a letter this week, interestingly. Today's letter comes from Jay from Kent. Hi, Tillertattle. Really enjoyed your first episode. Oh, cheers, mate. I'm a married man with an 18-month-old and a pretty good job that keeps me and my family comfortable. However, I'm finding myself looking at narrowboats and idly thinking about leaving it all behind and living on the canals. I don't think I'd do it. I love my family and my job. Oh, right, so on about leaving your wife and kid. Right, okay. I love my family and my job is okay, but it's slowly becoming an obsession to the extent where I've planned out a boat layout and a good year's worth of cruising in my head. Again, I'm not planning on doing anything with these plans. It just feels nice having them in my head. Sorry for venting. I just need to get off my chest. Really looking forward to the next episode, Jay. Well, quite a lot to unpack in that email, isn't there? Firstly, thanks for writing. I'm glad you've enjoyed episode one. As for your narrowboat fantasies, they are just fantasies. From a practical standpoint, living on the cut isn't glamorous in any way, shape or form, and it's certainly not as glamorous as, you know, an Instagram post with a filter on might suggest. Any lifestyle that requires you to carry a container of your own poo any sort of distance can't be considered glamorous. Secondly, and I'm drastically underqualified to give life advice, but I'll give it a go. I think they're having a fairly standard reaction to a big life change. And I think it's having the baby, to be honest. So having a baby makes you reevaluate your life choices. And I think it's sort of fairly normal to wonder, you know, what if. Advice-wise, it's just having a chat with the missus, with your better half. Maybe don't open with, I fantasise about running away from you and the baby and living on the canal, but have a chat about where your lives are going. Perhaps if you talk things out and you can agree on some long-term planning, you might find your interest in canals, narrowboats, maybe mellows into sort of like maybe holiday plans, something like that. Phew, that was a little bit heavier than expected. Perhaps next week we'll move on from relationship advice to something a little bit more relaxed. If you've got a burning issue you'd like to get off your chest, you want to get in touch and have some advice from the world's worst agony uncle, get in touch via email, podcast@keepingafloat.co.uk, or through our social media. I'll put links to both our Facebook and Twitter, and I'll put them in the show notes. That just about wraps up our second episode of Tillertattle. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'll be back next week, by which I'm hopeful that we'll have the show should be on iTunes, maybe Google Play. In the meantime, you can find us at keepingafloat.co.uk/podcast or soundcloud.com/tillertattle. Thank you for listening and see you soon.